Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Women Emerging podcast. I'm Julie Middleton, Director of Women Emerging. Every week I speak with women around the world of different ages and in different sectors about how they lead, because we need many more women leading in the world today. We explore how women lead differently and do it their way, which is authentic, fulfilling, and highly effective. I have to be the one who did it. Simple words, don't make much sense. But right in the middle of this episode, Angela said them to me, and they absolutely stung, and they've stuck. Let me explain why. So recently I've been looking back at myself as a young leader and thinking about the extent to which how I chose to lead was defined not by what I wanted to do, but a sort of a response to what I saw around me and that I didn't want to do. Now, I'm 66 next week, so me as a young leader is a long time ago, at least 40 years. And I became a leader when most of the leaders in Britain and around me were men, and the women who were leaders had gone to the types of schools where you got lots of practicing as a leader because you got it on the sports field, playing hockey or something like that. Now, I didn't go to a school like that, so I never got that experience. My luck was that very early on in my career, my boss saw it as a really high priority that I should be pushed to lead, even if it was a tiny team, to take responsibility for a group of people to achieve something. Well, I remember he used to say to me, Julia, if the first time you lead is too late, and actually he defined too late as 28, I was, I think, about 22, 23 at the time. If you don't get going early, then you don't bounce back from your mistakes. When you're young and you get leading wrong, you sort of bounce back. As you get older, it's tougher to bounce back. So I got put into leading very early on in my career. But it did mean that I made an enormous number of mistakes. A lot of mistakes. Ones that were trips and ones that were substantial. But there's one that I haven't even now sorted out in my head. It continues to go round and round in my head. And when I met Angela, I thought, you know, I think a conversation with Angela will help me to get this one right. So here goes. I hope it's helpful. Angela, I've been looking forward to this conversation. Let me tell you a story of me as a young leader and getting something wrong. And the truth is, I don't think I know what I should have done to get it right. So I'd be looking forward to going through this. So years ago in the office, somebody whom I was the leader of, so I was in the leadership position, she collapsed in the office. And she didn't just faint. There was clearly some sort of fit going on. It was quite frightening, right? So we called the ambulance. And when the ambulance arrived, I went with the ambulance. I went with her. I don't think I thought for a second. I just walked out with her because I wanted to support her. That was the only thing I was thinking of. I don't think I was thinking as a leader. I think I was thinking as a colleague, but come back to that. In the ambulance, she was half in and half out. I was holding her hand. It was absolutely clear that she needed somebody holding her hand. Whether she needed her boss holding her hand or not, that's another question. Come back to that. We then got to the hospital, and as you can imagine, like all casualty units, they were asking lots of questions about how she fell and how this and how that. I was the only one who could really answer them. So I had to go in. I had to answer all their questions. And it was pretty grim.
And then I would think about 2 hours later when she was sort of more together and she was sitting up in this trolley. And for the first time, she really sort of took me in. And I remember her eyes looking at me and I looked at her. And we looked backwards and forwards. And the look in her eye made me immediately think, I bet this hugely high-performing colleague, member of my team, I thought she would probably resign quite quickly because I had overstepped some mark for all the best reasons in the world. And lo and behold, 2 months later, she resigned. And I look back and wonder what I should have got, what I should have done differently, and how you are when somebody who's in your team, when things are falling apart for them, how are you supportive without crossing a line? Angela, has anything like that ever happened to you?
Yes, Julia, and thank you. This is a very interesting question. And as you rightly said at the beginning, that there is no right or wrong answer, but I would add another sentence, which is one size doesn't fit all. In some cultural contexts, you may be expected, actually, the colleague may actually like the fact that you are a caring boss. In some other context, geographical context, they may feel that you are intrusive or you are overbearing. And I can give you two examples, if I may. In my team, there was a person, and he was a male colleague. And out of the blue, one day I got to know that he's in the hospital, and the rest of the colleagues from Kenya, they were going, the local colleagues from Kenya, they were going to the hospital and they asked me, and I was a new person in that office as well. They asked me that, like, would you like to go? We are going to the hospital. I really had to decide very quickly that do I want to go to the hospital? Because this person may not like that it could be an invasion into privacy. And also, I was not very familiar with the cultural expectations in that context, right? So what I did instead, I asked them to buy a bouquet of flowers and send that to him. And later on, once he went back to his home, I actually went along with my boss as, like, paying a visit to his home. So I would say the younger me, if I was faced with such a situation and without the sensitivity to the cultural context, I may have done what you did. But in the other context, I would say that, like, when I was working in Pakistan with the chamber, one of the colleagues, actually, we were in a restaurant and had a medical condition, and we were just having a lunch and had a medical condition, and he just collapsed. And I was the first one to go and actually touch his pulse and to see if everything is all right. Given the Pakistani cultural conservative context, I may should not have done it. I was, like, not expected to do this, but this was my, I would say, impulsive reaction. And I don't regret that. And it was not that I mean, he continued to be on the board. In fact, he was very grateful that I called the ambulance and we rushed him to the hospital. I got in touch with his wife and informed her that, like, what has happened, but I did not go to the hospital. So again, I think I would say that both times, what stopped me from going into the hospital was the fact that I thought that this might be invasion of someone's privacy, because nobody likes to be seen. Yourself wouldn't want to be seen by strangers in that vulnerable situation. So again, as you rightly said, Julia, there is no one size fit all. But I think when we are thinking about these things, if we just take a step back and consider the cultural context and which position we are in, sometimes it helps.
I think when you're a new leader, you don't want to be like all those other people. who, you know, your parents' generations who were so stoic and, you know, had very clear lines on privacy and almost ignored people's problems on the basis that they was inappropriate to interfere. So you don't want to be like them, and you don't want to be unsympathetic, unkind, and just not there as a leader. You want to show emotion, you want to show supportive. And that is such a strong instinct that sometimes it blinds you to the reality that you are actually, in this context, not the friend, not the colleague, but the leader.
For some, again, no one size does not fit all. For some, when they are breaking down, if you put a hand on their shoulder and let them know you understand what's going on, you actually earn them back. You earn a commitment or loyalty that I don't think the older generation had, because they felt embarrassed of their emotions, whereas the younger generation doesn't feel embarrassed of expressing their emotions. Often I have seen that people are appreciative of being having feeling empathy from their bosses, from their leaders, but it varies from person to person how much you can take the liberty, whether it is a physical touch or just a coffee, stepping outside of the office and going for coffee and actually just providing a listening ear to the problems that they are going through, and nothing beyond that.
It's interesting when you talk, it makes me feel like, I am terrible at going to extremes. So in this situation, I want to show empathy, I want to show support, so I overdo it. And actually, and sort of, you know, like you adjust the car and you turn the steering wheel madly to the left or to the right, when actually you just needed to inch it a tiny bit to the left or the right. And maybe it's about finding the gentle, quiet symbols that you understand and you are supportive, rather than going over the top. And when I jumped in the ambulance, when I should probably have quietly touched her shoulder, told her everything would be all right, phoned ahead to the hospital to brief them on what had happened, but let somebody else actually get into that ambulance with her.
Yes. In situations where people break down in front of you because they are going through some family challenges, whether there is a death in the family or there is divorce or issues like this or medical issues, my reaction is always to listen. If we are sitting in the office, I always, through my hand gesture, either on the shoulder, if it's a woman and I know this person well, I will give a side hug. So to show that, I'm a human too, and I will share if I have experienced these and what had helped me in good stead. So it's kind of creating.
But what wouldn't you do?
If the person starts to share more information than needed, I will stop. I can't step into it. If the person starts to ask me about her problems, I would hear, but I would not comment on it. And the third thing is that if this person is what I would actually twist the conversation to or direct the conversation to, how can I help you to pass through this difficult time? Because that's also how I'm showing that I care. How is your workload looking? Do you need some time off? Do you need a couple of hours off? Do you want some help in this? Should I remove some of the deadlines? Should we transfer some of the work? So there are various ways of showing how you care, rather than just, diving into the conversation and trying to understand and find solutions for that person of their personal challenges. Also, to have this conversation in a way where the person understands that he or she is a valuable member of this team. So not making them see as, oh my God, we have to take the load off you, but actually making them understand and see that you are valuable. Your input is needed.
Angela, there's also a danger that you sort of you slide into almost the role of being the counselor rather than the leader, and even sometimes the sort of the support mechanism. I mean, I can think of again young leaders who've told me, you know, I've been drawn into the situation where, you know, members of my team phone me up at 2 o'clock in the morning to share their problems with me. Because that's a danger too, isn't it? That you slide away from the role of leader and become, what is it? What do you become?
I think again, you're absolutely right that, like, in certain cases, some people, some of the team members do not know their own boundaries. So it's not you as a leader who is overstepping the boundary, but actually it is on the other side. That other person is overstepping the boundaries.
And
And
they're doing
in
it because they're needy.
Yeah, absolutely. And also not all the time needy. Sometimes people think that this is their privilege.
So if you have a sense that you are being drawn out of the role of being a leader into becoming a counselor who could be phoned at any time of the night or the day for that person's needs, what do you do? How do you stop that happening?
I would say that, I may take the call once to see if there is an emergency, but the next day I will have the conversation and convey the message very firmly that this is not on. You keep that persona of a leader when you engage with people, when they are sharing their personal issues with you. And I feel one has to stop thinking that you have the answer. You have to provide an answer, or you have to provide a solution in a person's personal challenges because you are the leader. You have to stop wearing that hat all the time because no, it is not your role. It is not your job to provide a solution at that point. It is not a challenge or a problem in your work that you as a leader have to provide a solution to.
So, what should I have said to myself as I jumped into that ambulance without thinking?
You should have asked the paramedics whether you are needed, and you ha should have stopped for a second to think, what value are you adding there? Are you really needed? Or is it just because you want to prove something to your own self? Often we start to do things in such situations, or when we are faced with challenges, we feel that, oh my God, I have to provide the solution or the answer, or I have to be the one who did it. And I'm not putting myself aside. I often I'm faced with these challenges in different situations. And where I tell myself, hey, wake up, you cannot do anything. First ask how useful you can be in other situation. Maybe I'm more useful. Maybe you would have been more useful by actually looking into her contacts and phoning the people who she wanted to be with, not you. Because what you caused to her, I mean, I don't know whether she resigned or not, but what you caused to her was her job and the embarrassment as well, or the feeling that, and this was not your intention. So sometimes unknowingly, we actually cause more harm than we want to.
Angela, thank you for that clarity.
Clarity, it has to be said, 40 years on, but clarity indeed. And as I say, right at the beginning, it was those words, I have to be the one who did it. If I'm really honest, I think those words were in my head when I decided to get into the ambulance. There were lots of bits in my head as I got into the ambulance, but one of them also was the sort of drama of it and the wanting to be the person who got into the ambulance with her. We all come to leading with some scars. Certainly, I came to leading having up to then never worked for or around a leader that I admired. And that had a profound impact on me. But I think it wasn't just the experience of leading that, or the watching of leading that had defined how I led. It was also, you know, life generally. Okay. Let me tell you a story, another of my stories. I was once on a motorbike, on the back of a motorbike, holding on to a very cool new boyfriend. And he was riding and we were probably going too fast. Anyhow, we skidded off the road and we skidded along the grass verge, really quite a long way, and I passed out. And I have a very strong memory of when I came to, being a bit confused, but mainly staring up at this policeman who was filling in a ticket. And I was about to get a fine for digging up the verges on the side of this road. I thought that was the ultimate absence of empathy. And when he finally had finished licking his pen and filling out my form that would require me to go to the town hall and pay a fine, when he'd finished that, then he phoned the ambulance. And I don't know, a few hours later, I remember sitting in a hospital being put back together again. And I reckon that also influenced how I dealt with that situation at work later. You know, it's not just responding to how other people lead, it's to life generally. Things happen and they leave scars, you remember them. And then in my case, certainly, I sort of over-respond to them in my leading and, of course, jump into the ambulance. I'm pretty clear that the past frames the future. But it particularly does if we let it do so. Put it this way, I wish I'd had the conversation with Unjala a long, 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 long time ago. So, don't be the one who did it. Show empathy, but also judgment. Yeah, it's been a useful episode for me, I hope for you. I send you all my love. Next week, another how-to. Lots and lots of love in the meantime. There's also loads more you can learn from other women if you go to our website, womenemerging.org. That's womenemerging.org. Over time, we are determined to redefine leading so that more of us can say, if that's leading, I'm in.